everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, the editor of Turbo Machinery International. And today's episode is structured a little differently. We are featuring an interview with Dr. Jeffrey Goldmeer, the global hydrogen value chain leader at GE Vernova, that was recorded at PowerGen 2024 in January with our assistant editor, James Cook. So Dr. Goldmeer discusses, the pathways to decarbonization. So he touches on renewables and next generation combustors that support hydrogen and ammonia and, you know, some other topics. So we're just kind of going to jump right in and hear from GE Vernova's hydrogen leader. So talk to you at the end.
In the United States and the South and Southwest, there are only approximately 1,600 miles of hydrogen-ready pipeline. Why is there a lack of hydrogen infrastructure in the United States? And are there roadblocks for hydrogen development in other areas of the country?
So look, when you say lack of infrastructure, if you're here in the Gulf Coast, where most hydrogen in the U.S. is consumed and produced, I don't think they'd tell you they have an infrastructure issue. What we're talking about is a future where we might see the production of hydrogen more decentralized across the U.S., use of hydrogen more decentralized. So that might imply maybe there's a lack of infrastructure in those places, but those places today don't have large-scale hydrogen production, don't have large-scale hydrogen consumption. So I don't think it's a lack of infrastructure. I think that we haven't developed the hydrogen ecosystem in those locations. Now, that's not to say that hydrogen isn't produced locally and used locally around the world, even in the U.S. I think about, companies that are producing hydrogen for the use in fuel cells and forklifts, when you think about Plug Power or other companies, but they're producing it and transporting it by truck because they don't have the volume of needing a pipeline. So I think to say there's a lack of infrastructure today, maybe not so, but for a future, again, depends on where production and end consumption end up being.
In reference to burning 100% hydrogen at scale for power generation, what are the obstacles in the way of achieving that at this moment?
Oh, and you learned this from me, from others during the mega session earlier today. This is not a technology gap. All the OEMs are on a path to develop combustion systems, advanced combustion systems to burn 100% hydrogen. Many gas turbines today can already burn 100% hydrogen using diffusion flame combustion systems. The real challenge to being able to operate on 100% hydrogen on a gas turbine is scale. Scale of supply. Gas turbines can consume a large amount of fuel very quickly. We have the infrastructure to deliver that fuel for natural gas systems. We don't have that infrastructure for delivering hydrogen as a power generation fuel because we've not had to before. And one of the barriers is cost. Right today, hydrogen, whether you're going to produce it from steam methane reforming or you're going to produce it from electrolysis of water, will come at a price premium relative to natural gas. The way we dispatch gas turbines today really is a function of the lowest cost of electricity. So you need the lowest cost fuel. So if you have two options between choosing fuel A and fuel B, and fuel B is more expensive than fuel A, the dispatch market says, all else being equal, you will always choose the lower cost fuel. And say, we really don't have any market mechanism. This is, hold on, it's a more expensive fuel, but you emit zero carbon. Right? We don't have a carbon tax or something else to levelize that yet. And so you choose the lower cost fuel, which gives you the lowest cost of electricity, and therefore you dispatch. So it's really a function of how we set up electricity markets. It's how we think about infrastructure, how we think about fuel cost. Do we prioritize lower carbon fuels and incentivize them with subsidies? Do we do a carbon tax? But it's fundamentally about infrastructure and cost, not about technological capability on the gas turbines.
Kind of taking a departure from hydrogen for a bit, in terms of ammonia, what are the pros and cons of ammonia co-firing?
So again, if we think about a country like Japan, where today they're importing some very large percentage of primary energy in the form of LNG, right? They're importing gas or coal or oil to basically fuel society. If you say, hey, I look out to, let's say 2050, and I say, no, I can't do that. I can't import a carbon-based fuel anymore, but I still need some sort of import of energy to keep kind of the wheels of society rolling, what do? You can look at hydrogen, and that was kind of everyone's first concept. Great. except that people realize, well, hold on, hydrogen to move it with significant energy density, if I do the same play with hydrogen that I do with natural gas and I liquefy it, you know, cryogenically cool it, you're at minus 253 degrees C. That's minus 253 K, excuse me. I mean, you're 20 degrees from absolute zero, which requires an incredible amount of energy to do so. But you look at a molecule like ammonia that condenses at minus 33 degrees C, it requires significantly less energy to move it. There's already a global commodity in trade in ammonia. There are ships that are moving, you know, millions of tons of ammonia around the world a year. There's bunkering. So there's infrastructure for ammonia, and it's got economic advantages over hydrogen. Now you ask kind of pros and cons. Ammonia is toxic, but again, the industry moves 15 to 20 million tons a year, as far as I know, safely. And so I think there are solutions to doing that. Ammonia will require a brand new combustion system to resolve the issue of NOx production. But again, the industry is in the process of doing that, right? We announced our joint development agreement with IHI today. And so again, I trust that the engineers and the industry will solve these problems. So I think they're solvable problems. And now it's just a matter of weighing, you know, under what situations do the economic benefits really make sense for the use of ammonia versus hydrogen and LCS.
Absolutely. And my next question actually kind of builds off of something you said at the end there regarding the NOx emissions. So ammonia firing is typically known for producing high NOx emissions. So how are these emissions reduced to adhere to, you know, NOx regulations?
So when we think about combustion today, if you were to talk to a combustion expert in any of the OEMs and say, tell me about your off-the-shelf combustion systems today, you get one of two answers. You know, the legacy combustion systems that have been around since, let's say, the 1970s are these diffusion flame systems that are incredibly reliable. We've used them for steel mill gases. We've used them for natural gas. And they've got millions of hours of operation. They're great. But you run effectively near stoichiometric conditions, right? Mixture of fuel and air and stoichiometric balance at the flame front. You also have what will be called dry low NOx or dry low emissions or lean premix combustion systems. And they operate on a principle where you have a little bit of fuel, you're operating on the lean side of the stoichiometric, so excess oxygen, excess air. And they're great because you actually reduce NOx emissions with the fuels like natural gas. Problem with ammonia is it's 83% nitrogen by mass. So what you're, and when you have that nitrogen, it's going to start going and finding pathways to make NOx. And the kinetics bear this out. Lab experiments done by universities around the world bear this out. So the fundamental question then is, what combustion system could I run that resolves that fundamental chemistry issue? Because it's a chemistry issue. The answer goes back to fundamental chemistry or your first combustion science classes, right? We talked about our technology today either runs at or near stoichiometric, so fuel and air in perfect chemical balance, or on the lean side. But we didn't talk about is the rich side of the stoichiometric dome, where I'm intentionally fuel rich and oxidizer lean. When I do that, there's less air present for the nitrogen to actually turn into NOx. And so that's why what I talked about this morning in the mega session was we're talking about a multi-stage system where the head end or primary zone will be a lean zone. This will be a rich zone, excuse me. And again, I could go into my office, I could pull out, you know, an undergraduate textbook, but you talk about lean versus rich combustion. So the science itself isn't new. What we're talking about is the application of doing a multi-stage combustion system with a rich dome to try and resolve this problem. And again, you can go to the open literature and there are great universities around the world that are already looking at this fundamental problem. And that's kind of the answer. Now there are balances because you don't want to go too rich because there are some impacts of going too rich. But that's the fundamental solution. We don't take today's combustion systems and repackage them. You go back to the fundamental science of combustion and look for the answer there, and it gives us the answer.
Hello, welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview and the content and the subject matter. And be sure to check out our March-April print issue. It features more from Dr. Goldmeer on the subject. So thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, and we will see you next time.